Yeah, thank you very much for the kind introduction. Yeah, I slightly changed my title. So today I will talk about the spin manipulation by spin momentum locking in Lasswell two-dimensional systems. So my name is Makoto Koda from Tohoku University. And first of all, I thank to the organizers for giving me such opportunity, as well as giving us the nice backpack from the EPICS. So, okay, so today I will talk about the spin manipulation. Usually, for the spin manipulation, the people apply the external magnetic field or effective magnetic field by the spin orbital interaction, then spin starts to precess around this magnetic field. But in this talk, by precisely controlling the electron orbital motion, we can also control the spin states without inducing such a precessional motion. That is because of the spin momentum locking. So to explain this, first I briefly introduce the spin orbit interaction in semiconductor heterostructure, mainly 3-5 semiconductors. So spin orbit interaction acts as an effective magnetic field for the electron spins. Then I will show how to manipulate the spins by using the spin momentum locking. So to do so, first we need our spin polarized current. So we use the quantum point contact structures for the spin polarizer and also the spin detector. Then we move to the spin polarized magnetic focusing experiments to show the spin manipulation by using the spin momentum locking. And I finally conclude my talk. So this is a dispersion relationship. So without the spin orbit interaction, the spin up and the spin down states are degenerated each other like this. However, with this spin orbit interaction, so these two split to the k number direction, and there's a finite spin splitting energy. So for the electron spins, since this is a spin splitting, so this acts as an effective magnetic field. So this description is a single particle in the vacuum, but same as in semiconductors. So this effective magnetic field is proportional to the electron momentum and also the internal electric field. So that means when the electron is moving to, let's say, at positive the momentum direction, the effective magnetic field is upwards, so electrons start to precess around this effective magnetic field. However, once we change the momentum direction to be negative, then effective magnetic field also becomes the opposite direction. So this is so-called the momentum-dependent effective magnetic field, and this is very, very important. Then what about this internal electric field? So for the semiconductor quantum well with the Lasswell spin orbital interaction, so this internal electric field corresponds to the potential gradient in the band structure. So here is a schematic of the conduction band in the semiconductor quantum well. So electron is sitting down in the quantum well and then confined by these two barrier layers. So electron can only move in X and Y plane. So in this case, going to the Y direction with momentum P. Then when we look at the conduction band, that we see such a potential gradient. So this potential gradient induces this internal electric field, which corresponds to this term. So we have our effective magnetic field perpendicular both to the electric field and also the electron momentum. So then when we set such a symmetric quantum well, which means that we do not have a potential gradient, then we have a very, very small effective magnetic field. However, when we have such an asymmetric quantum well structure, because of this potential gradient, that makes the large effective magnetic field, and we can control these two states by using the external gate structure. So this is another advantage to use this spin orbit interaction, because we can control this effective magnetic field by external means. So we can realize the spin functionalities without using the external magnetic field, and also the magnetic materials, and the people demonstrated the spin manipulation by using the spin orbit interaction. So here's an example for the spin manipulation, especially the electron spin resonance. So this is this is a Gary Morse-Knight based quantum dots, and so here is a single electron in the quantum dots, and they apply the AC electric field. Then electron wave packet is moving back and forth here, so that means that makes the positive and the negative momentum, and that makes the AC effective magnetic field. And with the static perpendicular external magnetic field, they nicely show the electron spin resonance by using the AC spin orbit field. And the similar idea has been done by using the optically injected spins. So also, by precisely controlling the electron momentum orientation by using such a ballistic wires and also the meander lines, then also they nicely shows the spin resonance experiments. So in these studies, basically they introduce the spin precessional motion around the effective magnetic field, and this means that this is the replacing of the external magnetic field to the spin orbit field, which is very, very important for the technological application, for example, in quantum computation. So here, I will show the completely different way to control the spin states by using the spin momentum locking. So here, this is a effective magnetic field orientation in the momentum space for Rauschenberg spin orbit interaction, or this is a spin texture in the Dirac-Kohn in topological insulator, for example. So then, this spin orientation is always perpendicular to the electron momentum, and this is so-called the spin momentum locking. Then let us consider the momentum change from the upwards to downwards with the clockwise orientation. So in such a case, the spin orientation is also, when we rotate the electron momentum, the spin orientation is also gradually changes, and finally we can get the opposite spin states from the initial one. So, but this is in the momentum space. So when we convert this to the real space, such a momentum rotation corresponds to the circular orbital motion. So when we can induce such a circular orbital motion, we also control the spin states like this, and that this is a way to without inducing the spin precessional motion. So this is a way to control the spin states by using the spin momentum locking. But but this system should be in a ballistic. So since spin momentum locking is not only in semiconductors, but also, of course, in the topological insulators and recently in the oxide interface, so this is a very this is a general idea to control the spin state in these systems, and there are several advantages. So for example, since we do not induce the spin precessional motion, so we can suppress the spin dephasing, and also fast spin manipulation is possible on the order of a few picoseconds, and this is a unique way to control the spins by using the orbital trajectory. So to demonstrate this, first we need a spin polarized current. So we focus on the quantum point contact structure. So quantum point contact is generally based on the semiconductor two-dimensional electron gas with such a two metal gates. And when we apply the negative gate bias voltage to these metal gates, the electrons start to deplete around here, and we can get the pure one-dimensional channel here. So since this lateral confinement is strong enough, the conducting channel start to quantize. So this is a single channel formation, this is a two channel between, and so on. And at the same time, because of the strong lateral confinement, the potential structure around here shows the spatially dependent. So as you see here, so x direction is along the channel direction, and the y direction is a perpendicular to the channel, and we focus on two different points. So one is the center of the channel, and the other point is a little bit away from the center. Then we look at the potential, the quantum wave structure. So at the channel center, since electron is flowing here, so that means we have a large electron probability inside the quantum well, and the corresponding potential gradient is something like this. However, in this blue point, since electrons start to deplete because of this side gate, so the electron probability is less, and also the potential gradient also becomes weak. And since the effective magnetic field depends on this potential gradient, so that means we have a different effective magnetic field in these positions, and that means we have an effective magnetic field gradient along the y direction. So once we have such an effective magnetic field gradient, that induces the spin-dependent force. And this is very, very similar idea to the Stellungerer experiment, which is very famous in the quantum physics. So in this experiment, the silver particles are going to the non-uniform external magnetic field. Then after that, spin up and spin down, spin angular momentum were spatially separated. So instead of the non-uniform external magnetic field, by using the effective magnetic field gradient, we can also make such a spin-dependent force, and hopefully we can get the spin-polarized current. So to show this, first we conduct the wave packet simulation. So when the wave packet is going to such a narrow constrictions, spin up and spin down densities are spatially separated like this, and only this down spin can go through this narrowest constriction part, and we can get the down spin polarization. So to demonstrate this, we use such a lateral type side gated indium the quantum point contact based on the indium gallium arsenide quantum well. So here is a schematic. So we control the conducting channel by using these two side gates, and also at the same time we use the top gate to control the spin orbit field. So first we set very weak spin orbit field, then we measure the conductance. So we observe such a quantized conductance in steps of the 2e squared by h. So and this is a very, very general feature for the one-dimensional conducting channels. Then we next change the large spin orbit field. So in addition to this quantized conductance, we also observe the quantized conductance around the 0.5. And we can also estimate the actual spin polarization by using the short noise measurement. And the spin polarization is around 70% and around this 0.5 structure, and even higher spin polarization in the lower conductance. So to further confirm the spontaneous spin splitting in this 0.5 structure, we apply the DC source drain bias voltage. So here is again, this is our 0.5 structure. Then when we apply the DC source drain bias voltage in between here, so this 0.5 structure is once disappears here, but instead we observe the two different plateaus around the 0.25 and also the 0.75, and this is a sign of the spontaneous spin splitting, because these so-called the quota integer plateau can only observed when we have a Zeeman spin splitting. So this is the example of the gallium arsenide-based the quantum point contact. They apply the large in-plane magnetic field to lift the spin degeneracy. So they observe these half-integer plateaus around 0.5 and also the 1.5. And this 0.5 structure develops to the 0.75 and 0.25. But in our case, we do not induce apply the external magnetic field. So this is a spontaneous spin splitting in our QPC structure. So further application of the source drain bias voltage makes disappearance of these plateaus, then we observe the weak 0.5 structure again here. So anyway, so we can get the spin polarized current in the QPC structure, so we can move to the magnetic focusing experiments. So again, we use the indium gallium arsenide-based quantum well. So layer structure is very, very complicated, but this is because we can induce the relatively large spin orbit field on the order of the 19 Tesla. And then we process into such a whole bar structure with the top gate to control this spin orbit field. So actually we have two different devices. One is a whole bar and one is the other is a QPC. So when we zoom in this part, we have our emitter QPC and the collector QPC in parallel. And we can control the conductance and also the spin polarization by using the side gate bias voltages. And by applying the small perpendicular external magnetic field, we can induce such a electron orbital motion. So this is a detailed measurement conditions here. So first, we check such a magnetic focusing signal without applying these two side gates. So this is the collector resistance as a function of the perpendicular external magnetic field. So in the positive side, so we observe nice Scheibelinkoff-Dohertz oscillation with the beating pattern, which indicate the relatively large Rushmore spin orbit interaction. And in the negative side, we observed such a two peak structures before starting the Scheibelinkoff-Dohertz. So first peak corresponds to the direct incoming electron from the emitter to collector narrow constrictions. And the second peak corresponds that once the electron is reflected on the wall and the refocusing to the collector constrictions. So we observed such a magnetic focusing signal. So then we also check the spin properties. So here is the quantized conductance in emitter and the collector QPCs. So we observed such a quantized plateau, including the 0.5 structures here. So now we are ready for the magnetic focusing with spin polarized current. But we have to be a little bit careful of this, this structure. That is because of our spin polarization is induced by the effective magnetic field. So effective magnetic field is as I explained, it's a momentum dependent. So that means the electron momentum in the emitter and the collector is actually opposite orientation. So that means the spin polarization in the emitter and the spin selectivity in the collector is actually the opposite orientation. So we have to be very careful of these structures. Then we move to the experimental data. So first, we set our conductance to be unspin polarized plateau here. Then we measure the magnetic focusing signal, which is very, very similar. So this is a first peak, and this is a little bit broader second peak. Then we next change our one of the conductance to be spin polarized. In this case, now the emitter is spin polarized, but the collector is unspin resolved. So in such a case, the resulting signal is similar to the previous one. So finally, we set both conductance to be spin polarized and also the spin resolved. So in this case, the first peak is much, much enhanced like this. So to understand this enhancement of the signal, we need to consider the theoretical description of the voltage, and also we conduct the Monte Carlo simulation. So here, so the detection voltage in the collector QPC is simply described by this formula. So gamma IE corresponds to the nominal electron coming through the collector QPC divided by the 2E squared by H. So that means that this is the voltage. And this voltage is modulated by the emitter spin polarization and also the incoming spin polarization PC. And let us first consider the unpolarized the current case. So which means this both PE and the PC equals zero. Then we conduct the Monte Carlo simulation. So this is the first peak, and the peak amplitude corresponds to the disk coefficient. Then next we consider the spin polarized case. But first, the emitter spin polarization and the incoming spin polarization is the same. So in such a case, because of the the spin selectivity is the opposite spin orientation as I explained before. So that means this blue spin is completely reflected. So that's why in the Monte Carlo simulation, we do not have a signal here. So that is easily understood from these equations, because the emitter spin polarization is, let's say, this is the plus one, and the incoming spin polarization is the same, so that means that also this is a plus one. So this means this term is completely cancelled. Then if we have a spin momentum locking, the spin orientation becomes the opposite when this electron coming into the collector QPC. So in such a case, in the Monte Carlo simulation, we have a very large signal. And that is because the spin polarization in the emitter spins and the incoming spin polarization is the opposite. So this is a plus one, but this is a minus one. So that's why the voltage is enhanced. So from this amplitude of the signal, we can actually evaluate the spin polarization and also the relative orientation of the spins. So we compare the experimental data with this Monte Carlo simulation. So such an enhancement of the signal and also the enhancement of the signal is nicely reproduced in the Monte Carlo simulation. So the electron spin orientation is rotated at 180 degrees and coming back to the collector QPC, which is a strong signature of the spin momentum locking. So from this Monte Carlo simulation, we can also calculate the spin orientation during this circular orbital motion. So this is during circular orbital motion, the spin orientation is always towards the effective magnetic field orientation with the small spin precessional motion. So this dashed line corresponds to the adiabatic limit. So basically this SX spin component is followed to this adiabatic limit. So that's why the spin orientation changes from the positive SX to negative SX here. So to understand the condition for satisfying this spin momentum locking, we further extend our Monte Carlo simulation. So this color plot corresponds to the magnetic focusing signal with different spin orbit parameters. So that means the different spin orbit field. And this blue region corresponds to the peak structures here. So for example, at very large spin orbit field here, the simulated magnetic focusing signal is something like this. So for the first peak, because of this spin momentum locking, the spin orientation is changed, so we have an enhanced signal like this. However, in the second peak, still spin momentum locking is stands, so that means the once the electron spin orientation is flipped, but this spin orientation is again flipped due to this second orbital motion. So in such a case, the relative spin orientation between incoming spins and also the spin selectivity is the opposite. So that's why the signal is suppressed. And then opposite things happen again in the third and fourth peaks. So to understand more details about these peak structures, that we plot each peak amplitude with the different spin orbit parameters. So this is the peak amplitude as a function of the spin orbit parameters for first peak, second peak, third peak, and fourth peak. So these oscillatory behaviors corresponds to the spin precession, and these saturated enhanced values and also the suppressed values corresponds to the spin momentum locking regime. So as you see here, for the first peak, the signal is immediately goes to the spin momentum locking regime from the very small spin orbit parameters. However, so this region rests and rests in second and third peak. So that means this stability of the spin momentum locking depends on the cyclotron radius. And actually this spin momentum locking regime is determined by the cyclotron frequency and also the spin precessional frequency, which determined by this spin orbit parameter. So this is a cyclotron frequency. So that is depends on the Fermi velocity and also the cyclotron radius. And the spin precession frequency is depends on the spin orbit parameter and also the Fermi velocity. And if the spin precession frequency is much, much faster than the cyclotron frequency, so that means the spin orientation is always towards the effective magnetic field. So the condition of the spin momentum locking should be the omega so over omega c should be much, much larger than 1. But if this ratio equal 1, so that means that this is a transition from the spin precessional motion to the spin momentum locking regime. So that means that this spin orbit parameter at the transition should be depends on the focusing radius r here. So to check this, we also calculated the magnetic focusing signal with different diameter structures from 700 nanometer to the 88 nanometer. So as you see here, for the first peak is gradually shifted when the diameter is becomes smaller, this first peak position is shifted towards the larger magnetic field because of the smaller circular orbital motion. And at the same time, the spin momentum locking regime is gradually changed towards the large the spin orbit parameters here. So to understand these features, we extract these lines in one figure like this. So these saturated values corresponds to the spin momentum locking regime, and this is a transition point. And this transition spin orbit parameter, which is called the alpha TL, is gradually shifted towards the large values when we get the smaller the cyclotron radius. That is corresponds to these equations. So then when we plot these figures with the alpha times R values, all different lines collapse in the one line. So that means this focusing signal shows the universal behavior to spin orbit parameters and also the cyclotron radius. And this strongly suggests that the ratio between the spin precessional motion and the cyclotron motion is very important to satisfy the spin momentum locking. Okay, so I finally conclude my talk. So we show the spin manipulation by using spin momentum locking. So to do so, we use the spin polarized the quantum point contact structures, and we show such a spin orientation by using the experiment as well as the Monte Carlo simulation. So thank you for your attention.
I had a question about the plateaus that you were seeing as a function of voltage for one of the earlier devices.
Yeah.
Where you discussed spin splitting.
Okay, so in the QPC structure.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Sorry, it's so far back. Here. Yeah, that one. So I just might have misunderstood, but in the points where you see, in the voltages where you see the spin splitting, I would have expected the number of plateaus to double.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see that. You see rather than seeing quarter fractions and half fractions, you only see the quarter fractions.
Yeah. So you mean the
yeah,
you also expect
the
0.5.
What's happened to the half fraction in the single fraction? Yeah.
Okay. So why we only have a quarter integer plateaus is basically this is a way to think about. So basically this conducting channel is an average of the electron going to the right and also the left. So this is the average value of the current. So in such a case, for example, so this is a 0.5, the energy splitting at the 0.5 structure, which means because of the spin splitting, and we only have, let's say, up spin channels here. Then when we change the DC source drain bias, which means the chemical potential between the source and the drain is gradually changes. So that means we have two different possibilities. So one is the source chemical potential is above the spin splitting level, but the drain chemical potential is below. So in such a case, for the electron from left to right, this is, let's say, conductance is 0.5, but drain to source, this is no current because there's no levels. So the average value becomes 0.25. And the same things happen to the to this case. So it's depending on the chemical potentials between the source and drains and how many levels in between. Then we can determine which plateau we will expect. So that's why the first we see the 0.5 plateau around here. So that means there is some energy difference between the spin splitting level and these both chemical potentials. So that's why even we slightly change the levels, still we see the 0.5 structure. But once we go into these schematics, then 0.5 structure is gone. Yeah, a little bit complicated, but yeah.
Any other question?
In your spin polarized emitter,
yep,
you select the inject spin down, but is there a way to emit spin up?
Yes, we can. So that depends on the sign of the Rushbaugh parameter. So. So basically, the spin orientation is determined by the emitter is always, let's say, positive momentum. So if we have the positive the Rushbaugh parameters, then we have the down spin polarization. But once we change the sign of the Rushbaugh parameter to the negative, that the entire this circular effective magnetic field is completely switched to the opposite orientation. So that means that we can get the up spin.
But in reality, you have two Fermi circles,
yes,
with different radius.
Yeah.
Is it that you always choose the one with a larger radius?
This is also a little bit correlated to the origin of this spin polarization. So our spin polarization is due to the effective magnetic field gradient here. So that means if the effective magnetic field is a positive value, let's say, so this gradient is also positive, let's say, but if we change the effective magnetic field to negative, then this gradient is also negative. That makes the different spin polarization. And this slope can be changed by the spin orbit parameter, as a sign of the spin orbit parameter. So that's why it depends on the sign of the Rushbaugh parameter.
Any others? Okay, so if not, then let's thank the speaker.